Welcome to this lecture on trauma. In this lecture, we're going to look at definitions of trauma, what trauma feels like. I'm going to share my experience with trauma and yoga, and we're going to look at how a traumatized person might show up in your yoga class. Like all the lectures on mental health, this lecture does have the potential to be triggering, especially if you have your own history of trauma. So first and foremost, please do take care of yourself. In her groundbreaking book, Trauma and Recovery, that looks at developmental, political, and feminist perspectives of trauma, Judith Herman says, "Psychological trauma is an affliction of the powerlessness. At the moment of trauma, the victim is rendered helpless by overwhelming force. Traumatic events overwhelm the ordinary systems of care that give people a sense of control, connection, and meaning." Bessel van der Kolk, another leader in the field of trauma, says, "Trauma, by definition, is unbearable and intolerable. Most rape victims, combat soldiers, and children who have been molested become so upset when they think about what they experienced that they try to push it out of their minds, trying to act as if nothing happened and move on. It takes tremendous energy to keep functioning while carrying the memory of terror and the shame of utter weakness and vulnerability." The experience of trauma is unfortunately a common one. In the US, more than half the population, 60.7% of men and 51.2% of women, reported exposure to at least one traumatic incident in their lifetime. This includes rape, molestation, physical attack, combat, shock, threat with a weapon, accidents, natural disasters, abuse, neglect, or witnessing something traumatic. In a Norwegian study, 91% of the patients in a psychiatric hospital reported being exposed to at least one traumatic incident in their lives, and 69% of patients reported being repeatedly exposed to trauma over longer periods of time. But not everyone who experiences a traumatic incident develops PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. The proportion of people diagnosed with PTSD in their lifetime is 12.2%. But just because someone isn't diagnosed with PTSD, it doesn't mean that they don't feel the effects of a traumatic experience. In 2017, I was in Bourke Street in Melbourne with my kids, and a man drove his car down the pedestrian mall, killing and injuring many people. It was really scary, to say the least. Thankfully, my children and I were unharmed, but I felt the reverberation of the incident in my body for days and weeks afterwards. Thankfully, I had the tools to be able to meet the trauma, and while I'm not really that keen on returning to Bourke Street Mall again, I really barely think about it anymore. And yet, when I went to a yoga class about a year later and the teacher instructed us to hold our arms above our head for a really long time, my arms began to ache as my body remembered the ache from holding my children in my arms and running away during the Bourke Street incident. I was no longer actively thinking about the incident, but my body remembered it, and the memory was triggered in a yoga pose. Does this mean that we should never ask our students to hold their arms above their head for an extended period of time? No, it doesn't. But it does mean that we need to be aware that anything could trigger a traumatic memory, and we should always give our students choice and autonomy over their bodies. Given the prevalence of trauma in our society and the far-reaching effects it can have on people's lives, it's important that as yoga teachers, we understand how to make our yoga classes a safe and nurturing space for our students who have experienced trauma. Just like with depression and anxiety, the signs and symptoms of trauma are psychological, they're physical, and they're behavioral. Let's look at the psychological symptoms to begin with. These include recurrent and intrusive memories and or flashbacks of a traumatic event, feeling distressed if there's a reminder of the traumatic event, distressing dreams, depression, fear, difficulty concentrating, disassociation, irritability, or feeling disconnected from self and others. The physical symptoms of trauma often include panic attacks, racing heart, fatigue, restlessness, feeling tense, wound up, and edgy, or feeling uncomfortable being in the body, breathing quickly, mouth breathing, or hot and cold flushes. The behavioral symptoms of trauma include avoidance of stimuli associated with the traumatic event, an exaggerated startle response, decrease in social engagement, decrease of engagement in previously enjoyable activities, hypervigilance, sleep dysregulation, reckless or self-destructive behavior, or angry outbursts. In her book, Trauma and Recovery, Judith Herman provides this wonderful description of trauma. I'm going to read it to you now. The ordinary human response to danger is a complex, integrated system of reactions encompassing both body and mind. Threat initially arouses a sympathetic nervous system, causing the person in danger to feel an adrenaline rush and to go into a state of alert. Threat also concentrates a person's attention on the immediate situation. In addition, threat may alter ordinary perceptions. People in danger are often able to disregard hunger, fatigue, or pain. Finally, threat evokes intense feelings of fear and anger. These changes in arousal, attention, perfection, and emotion are normal adaptive reactions. They mobilize the threatened person for strenuous action, either in battle or in flight. Traumatic reactions occur when action is of no avail, when neither resistance nor escape is possible. The human system of self-defense becomes overwhelmed and disorganized. Each component of the ordinary response to danger, having lost its utility, tends to persist in an altered and exaggerated state long after the actual danger is over. Traumatic events produce profound and lasting changes in physiological arousal, emotion, cognition, and memory. Moreover, traumatic events may sever these normal integrated functions from one another. The traumatized person may experience intense emotion, but without clear memory of the event, or may remember everything in detail, but without emotion. She may find herself in a constant state of vigilance and irritability without knowing why. Traumatic symptoms have a tendency to become disconnected from their source and take on a life of their own. This is a video put out by BuzzFeed that shows what it's like to experience trauma.
It's like living with a leash on a little bit. You can do some stuff, but every now and then you remember that it's there.
I was living in Japan during the earthquake in 2011.
A few weeks and months of political unrest while I was living overseas. We lived with bags by the door ready to go in case we needed to get out.
I found out in 2008 I had PTSD, complex PTSD, but I think the diagnosis should have probably been made when I was 14 years old.
I was raped, and as a result, I live with PTSD.
The civil war in Lebanon broke out in 1975. I was only 17 years old. I lived through that for about 12 years.
As it kind of sunk in, I started to feel really guilty because I had always associated PTSD with people who had been to war, and I just didn't think I deserved it.
The PTSD triggers, they ambush you. You don't know when it's gonna come. It's sort of the unknown. Every day you wake up and you don't know if you're going to have a trigger today.
I was at a movie and there's a part where this woman got trapped in a car. I had a serious panic attack.
There was a song that was talking about like a shooting and armed robbery, and just hearing that song, like, That was all it took.
Something happened when I was 13, and when my trigger happens, in that moment, I am 13.
Usually the sounds of jet planes overhead would trigger off the memory for me of those days. It would make me feel weak in the legs, and my memory will go back to that time trying to look after my children when they were little and protect them. Yeah, all I had to do is hear a jet plane, and that's where my mind will go.
At times, it has literally felt like I'm dying. You feel like this is, you're never gonna get past this. One of the things that's helped me a lot was group therapy. This happens to more people than you think.
Start to have a conversation with this thing that you have.
I did counseling for 2 years in college, and it felt like that got my life into a pretty manageable place.
I am trying to build up the courage to attend a support group.
I would have these days where you're just like, you know, there's nothing I can do to do anything that you're supposed to do. In group therapy, someone called it a lost day. It's such a simple thing, but putting the words lost day to those days helped me like overcome.
And I think accepting that is really important, and just being like, it's okay to like freak out and just be like, oh, this is scary, like, cause it's scary.
And don't ever tell them to get over it, because it's extremely painful.
It takes practice, and it takes patience, and it takes faith. You have to know that the fact that you've been through something so traumatic and you're here, you are much stronger than you think you are.
Don't feel guilty when you have a good day.
Give yourself time to heal.
You can't judge yourself for it.
It'll never be the same, but it can get better, and it's worth whatever it's gonna take. You can have a better life.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. You just gotta find the right thing that works for you.
And getting help is not a sign of weakness. It takes a lot of strength and a lot of courage, and you deserve the happiness that comes with getting better.
My name is Kate.
My name is Tammy.
My name is Kirk, and I live with PTSD. PTSD.
Okay, so we're going to look at two types of trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder and complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Let's dive into the DSM-5 criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder, otherwise known as PTSD. So the first criteria that must be met is A, exposure to actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violence in one or more of the following ways. One, directly experiencing the traumatic event. Two, witnessing in person the event as it occurred to others. Three, learning that the traumatic event occurred to a close family member or close friend. In cases of actual or threatened death of a family member or friend, the event must have been violent or accidental. Four, experiencing repeated or extreme exposure to aversive details of the traumatic event. So this might be first responders collecting human remains, police officers repeatedly exposed to details of child abuse and things like that. B, presence of one or more of the following intrusion symptoms associated with the traumatic event, beginning after the traumatic event occurred. One, recurrent, involuntary, and intrusive distressing memories of the traumatic event. Two, recurrent distressing dreams in which the content and or affect of the dream are related to the traumatic event. Three, dissociative reactions like flashbacks in which the individual feels or acts as if the traumatic event were recurring. Such reactions may occur on a continuum, with the most extreme expression being a complete loss of awareness of present surroundings. Four, intense or prolonged psychological distress at exposure to internal or external cues that symbolize or resemble an aspect of the traumatic event. And five, marked physiological reactions to internal or external cues that symbolize or resemble an aspect of the traumatic event. and C, one or more of the following symptoms representing either persistent avoidance of stimuli associated with the traumatic event or negative alterations in cognitions and mood associated with the traumatic event. So let's look at these two. So the first one, persistent avoidance of stimuli. So number one, avoidance of or efforts to avoid activities, places, or physical reminders that arouse recollections of the traumatic event. Or two, avoidance of or efforts to avoid people, conversations, or interpersonal situations that arouse recollections of the traumatic event. And then we've got negative alterations in cognition. So one, substantially increased frequency of negative emotional states, for example, fear, guilt, sadness, shame, or confusion. Two, markedly diminished interest or participation in significant activities, including constriction of play. Three, socially withdrawn behavior. Or four, persistent reduction in expression of positive emotions. And now we have D, alterations in arousal and reactivity associated with the traumatic event, beginning or worsening after the traumatic event occurred, as evidenced by two or more of the following. One, irritable behavior and angry outbursts with little or no provocation, typically expressed as verbal or physical aggression towards people or objects. Or two, hypervigilance. Hypervigilance is when we're constantly on alert, constantly on the lookout that for triggers or things that might go wrong. Three, exaggerated startle response. Four, problems with concentrating. And five, sleep disturbance, difficulty falling or staying asleep or restless sleep. And then E, the duration of this disturbance is more than 1 month. F, the disturbance causes clinically significant distress or impairment in relationships with parents, siblings, peers, or other caregivers, or with school behavior. And G, the disturbance is not attributable to the physiological effects of a substance like medication or alcohol or another medical condition. And then in the diagnostic criteria, what psychologists or doctors are asked to do is to specify whether there are dissociative symptoms. So the individual symptoms meet the criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder and the individual experiences persistent or recurrent symptoms of either of the following. So either depersonalization or derealization. So number one, depersonalization, persistent or recurrent experiences of feeling detached from, as if one were an outside observer of one's mental processes or body. So feeling like you're in a dream or a sense of unreality. Derealization is persistent or recurrent experiences of unreality of surroundings. For example, the world around the individual is experienced as unreal, dreamlike, distance or distorted. And then finally, specify if there's delayed expression. So if it's more than 6 months after the event. So let's talk about complex PTSD now. Two influential trauma therapists, you may have heard of them, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk and Dr. Judith Herman, they have argued that the criteria for PTSD in the DSM does not fully and accurately represent the full spectrum of traumatic experience and suffering, particularly those who have experienced prolonged and repeated trauma, such as childhood abuse and domestic violence. In her book that I talked about before, Trauma and Recovery, Judith proposes a diagnostic criteria of complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which I and some of my clients have found really helpful. Her diagnostic criteria is a little less prescriptive and precise than the DSM. Let's take a look at it now. So the first criteria is a history of subjectation to totalitarian control over a prolonged period from months to years. Examples include hostages, prisoners of war, concentration camp survivors, and survivors of some religious cults. Examples also include those subjected to totalitarian systems in sexual and domestic domestic life, including survivors of domestic battering, childhood physical or sexual abuse, and organized sexual exploitation. Number two, alterations in affect regulation. So affect is emotion, so being able to regulate your emotions. So number two, alterations in affect regulation, including one, a persistent dysphoria. So dysphoria is this low mood. Chronic suicidal preoccupation, self-injury, explosive or extremely inhibited anger, and it may alternate between the two. Or compulsive or extremely inhibited sexually. And again, it may alternate between the two. Number three, alterations in consciousness, including amnesia or hypernesia for traumatic events, so remembering or not remembering, transient dissociative episodes, depersonalization or derealization, reliving experiences, either in the form of intrusive PTSD symptoms or in the form of ruminative preoccupation. So ruminative preoccupation, rumination is when we think our thoughts go over and over, they spiral around on the same thought over and over again and don't really get us anywhere. Four, alterations in self-perception, including sense of helplessness or paralysis or initiative, shame, guilt, and self-blame, sense of defilement or stigma, sense of complete difference from others. And so this may include a sense of specialness, of feeling utterly alone, having a belief that nobody could possibly understand us, or perhaps even a non-human identity. Five, alterations in perceptions of the perpetrator, including a preoccupation with the relationship with the perpetrator, which, you know, can include preoccupation with revenge, unrealistic attribution of total power to the perpetrator. But Judith also puts in a little warning here or a caution that the victim's assessment of the power realities may be more realistic than the clinician's. Idealization or paradoxical gratitude, a sense of special or supernatural relationship with the perpetrator. Acceptance of belief system or rationalization of the perpetrator. Number six, alterations in relations with others, including isolation and withdrawal, disruption in intimate relationships. Repeated search for the rescuer may alternate with isolation and withdrawal. Persistent distrust, repeated failures or self-protection. And seven, alterations in systems of meaning, loss of sustaining faith, sense of hopelessness and despair. Okay, so that was a criteria for complex PTSD. As a yoga teacher, like I've said before, it's outside your scope of practice to diagnose PTSD or complex PTSD. This is really important. However, a student might tell you that they have a history of trauma. They might tell you that they have a diagnosis of one of these two, of PTSD or complex PTSD, or perhaps they might exhibit some of the following. Symptoms of depression or anxiety. Constantly on alert and looking around the class. Jumpy with loud sounds like a door slams and then they jump. Keeping their eyes open in class, even in relaxation. So a student with a history of trauma may keep their eyes open the entire class. Tension in the body, in the face. Difficulty trusting others. Not returning to class or coming to a class and then never coming back. Restlessness, daydreaming or disassociation, leaving during class, being hypersensitive to touch, not wanting to do partner work, not wanting touch or physical assist from the teacher, and not engaging with others. So, you know, presenting with just one or two of these indicators doesn't mean that your students has necessarily experienced trauma. No, you know, and if they don't exhibit any of these, it doesn't mean they haven't experienced trauma either. This list is merely intended to give you an idea of how trauma might show up in your yoga class. Okay, so that's it for the Western look at trauma. There'll be more information on supporting students with trauma later on in the training, but now we've laid the foundation of what's to come. If you need to take some time to take care of yourself after this lecture, please make the time to do so. Self-care is such an important part of being a mental health aware yoga teacher. I'll see you over in the next video.